Good evening, all of you, and this is probably my first podcast, actually, and I'm just wanting to try this out and share with my blog and those who follow me some tips on my podcast as to how do you awaken yourself with a direct method of self-inquiry. And I hope it's good, and I hope you enjoy it, and do feel free to get back in touch, and if you do want to have any questions with me or would like to share some of your experiences, would be glad to take them. Well, I'll just jump straight into the topic. So one of my favorite methods of self-realization, which has kind of helped me in a big way to experience and know beyond the intellectual side of knowing who you are and actually going to experiencing who you are, was inspired a lot by the teachings of Sri Ramana Maharishi. And the interesting thing about the Saint Ramana Maharishi was that there are really no books about him or written by him really per se, and they really he hits the topic straight about how do you get to know yourself directly. And it's a completely non-religious way of doing things. It's directly to the point. And we'll just dive into this straight away, and I hope it's simple enough for everybody to try it out. Well, the fundamental basis of a self-inquiry revolves around a tenet of differentiating and kind of understanding your relationship with the world. And when I say the world, I'm referring to the entire world and the experience of a world as a subset of what we call as the mind, which means your thoughts, the body, and the whole world that we see and experience through our senses is what we call as the mind. And the fact that we are fundamentally different from that is an important thing to know. And self-inquiry is a direct route to that experience. Right, so now let's jump into the concept of what we call as a self. And before we get down to an inquiry, so that we kind of get everybody back onto the same page of what I'm kind of referring to. The concept of a self just refers to, it's fundamental that we all have a definition of who we are, and that's what we call as a self. And at different levels of awakening, we are likely to have different definitions of a self. And most people would, I suppose, think of themselves as the name that you've been given for your body, and that you've been given your name by your parents. And you probably would also associate things like your personality, your traits associated with this particular body that you have at this point in time. And whatever people think that you are, in terms of your behavior and traits and stuff, you tend to think that these are what you call as a self. And it's not a wrong definition. It's a place that we're simply using to start and build from there as to get to a point where we can understand that there is much more to ourself than this little definition that we've been given about ourselves, which being the name and form and, doing a particular job or role in life or whatever. So this concept of self, we commonly refer to it as the I, and it's, I think, a good place to begin would be if I were to ask anybody out there, what's your name? And this would be true regardless of whichever language or whichever culture you ask this question, you would unconsciously see that most people would point in some way or the other to their heart and say, I am. And then you put your name. So I'd say, I am Mohan. And you'd say, whatever your name is, I am, Jack. I am whatever is your name. So you'd put that name there and you'd say, so nobody would just say, when someone's asked the name, you'd usually do something which points towards your, and it's usually to the common point, which is your heart. And your point, say, I am so and so. So we're going to kind of, in this discussion now, trying to understand a little more about this I through a series of investigations and questions, which are structured in a very simplistic way. Now, to get this discussion started, let's lay a fundamental definition which would help us take this thing to a next level of understanding that in anything that is in a perception of an experience of any sort, whether it's what you see or you feel or whatever it is, there is something, a concept of a perceiver who's perceiving things and an experience that is perceived. So we could call that as a subject and an object relationship. And fundamentally, there has to be the perceiver as a subject has to be different from the object so that you can perceive an experience. And at this point in time, it's important to use this difference of a subject and object to kind of keep your mind calm and not get into debates so that you could, you know, get a little beyond what we know about the eye. It's really important to understand that there's no use of a debate which takes of the form that, you know, is the world real or is it unreal? It really doesn't matter. The point is that there is an experience of the world and there is a perceiver of the world, and we're using this inquiry to get to understand who is this perceiver and what's the connection between this perceiver and the perceived, and use that to expand. So in my view, the world is neither real nor is it unreal. It's what we call it's a perception, it's an experience, it's a dream. And we'll come to more examples in future podcasts about that to explain what is the nature of this kind of an experience, right? So getting back to the subject and the object phenomenon that we're talking about, fundamentally there is a perceiver who we call as a subject, and the perceived is what we call as an object. And logically, you would think that the subject has to be different from the object, and when we say different, obviously the nature of a subject has to be different from that of the object, so that there's a perception that happens over there. Now, if we were to begin an inquiry, one of the best things to start with is to start with the very definition of the fact that we've been told, or it's been ingrained in us since we're born, to believe that we are the body, having this name and form and all that. So let's first start with the body. Now, what is the fundamental thing between a subject and an object is that anything that you are aware of, so I'm just going to stress on the word aware of, and anything that you're aware of by whatever means, that means, and aware of would translate to mean that you know of. So if you know something, that becomes an object. So if you think about it, we all know about our body. So we know that there is a body, we're aware of it. So it is a kind of an object. It's not really the subject. But we tend to have this confusion in ourselves because it seems to be like it is the source of consciousness, or it seems to be the source of life, or at least seems to play that way to us. But with deeper questioning, we'll come to that logic of what is the subject, what is the real subject, and what is an object. So we are aware of a body, so it's a subject, it's an object, and that which is witnessing or which is aware of, you know, the subject is the one that is really aware of this body, which is different from the body. Hold this thought in your mind. And one of the key things in self-inquiry here is that, you know, our logical minds are going to jump in and try to say, but, you know, this is you and you know that and that kind of stuff. But the point in a self-inquiry to set you free is to ask questions of this nature and don't allow the mind to give a logical answer. Hold the question in your mind and keep holding it long enough and think about it so that, you know, you start to dispel the fact that we just accept so many concepts which are not really true. And as you hold on to this, it will dawn on to you that there is merit to asking this question. And this is not done fundamentally to shake your foundations in life and so on, or to get confused about things, but it's going to ground you better. And you're actually going to enjoy the thing on the long run when you know that you're actually going to get much more out of this whole stuff. So if there is a subject which is watching this, or which is aware of this body, then it means that the subject which is watching it, let's not give it some name. We'll come to names like consciousness and awareness and all that a little later. But the point is, the subject is different from the object. So if you're aware of something, it's different from you. So you're aware of the body, so it's not you. The subject is different from the body. So that means the subject is not a person, it's not a name, right? And if you take this a little deeper on the same subject while we're at the body, you might as well dig in a little bit here and say that, look, the body is made of billions of cells. And, you know, within the cells, if you go back to your school times and remember a little bit of the biology, the cells have got so many parts. And within the cell, there's so many parts. There's a nucleus, mitochondria, to, you know, endoplasmic reticulum, to so many parts. And finally, if you're not the body, it's basically the same thing to say that you're not any of these particular cells either, because the cells make up the body, right? So fundamentally, you are not what you are aware of. So who you are is actually the person who is aware of the body, who's aware of the body. And the more you keep reminding yourself and holding this inquiry, the wisdom and the intuition opens up within you. Now, the important thing about this thing about here to understand a subject and object, just to give you a little digression to kind of make sense to you about the subject and object, is that I've often taken up some simple inquiries just for my own curiosity when at the beginning stages that, you know, let's look at something around your own house, for example. Let's say your watch. And why do you say, I'm not the watch? I mean, you wouldn't say you're the watch. And if you think, drill yourself a little deeper into this whole thing, why do you say you're not the watch? The answer to me would be that, look, I'm aware of it. I know about the watch, so it can't be me. It's an object. So anything that you perceive through your senses or just by being aware of something is, you know something, and whatever you know is basically going to be an object. It's not you. So if you can see something, if you can hear something, you can smell something, you can touch it, you can feel it. We're not discounting or debating now whether these experiences are real or unreal. We're simply saying that that's an experience and that comes into the realm of an object. And there has to be a subject which is witnessing these, because only then you can have a complete experience, when there's a subject and there's an object of experience. So taking this to the next level here, we would need to actually understand a little bit more from an intuition point of view of this, the word called awareness. And it's an important thing to it. I mean, it's the word could be a little tricky often, and it, sometimes people say it's consciousness or knowing and things like that. But it, what is really important for you in a journey of self-inquiry is to kind of avoid any words, because the words belong to the realm of mind and they confuse you. It's important to be a silent, intuitive and observant learner. And the key thing is, the more you bypass the mind, you would be able to kind of clearly separate yourself from the mind. And as you separate yourself from the mind, you'd be able to see that you are not a person, but you are actually a witness. And this witness is not just you. It's beyond the scope of the mind, and the mind cannot by any possible means actually know the observer. Rather, the observer knows, the observer or the person knowing is the one who actually knows about himself through this dream creation that's happening in what we would call as a phenomenon. So just to recap, so that we split this in this podcast into a few parts, so that we don't get too much into one particular session and then we keep giving up some more examples on these. The key thing here to summarize here is that fundamentally the principle of a self-inquiry is based on a simple logic that you are trying to differentiate basis and experience, who is the perceiver and who is the perceived. And as we go deeper, we will also explore into realms of the perceiver and perceived, and a little beyond that, what transcends both the perceiver and the perceived. And then we'll get down into the three wakings, the three states of the mind, and a couple of contemplations on how do we use these to actually stay anchored in being, as opposed to getting caught up with the mind and its habits of thinking about a multitude of things which are actually derived from its memories of many, you know, its impressions of many past lives that have been accumulated in it. So to summarize for this particular session here, we're going to talk about, just to put a quick message back into those who are listening to this podcast, that it's important to understand that we do experience a world, right? And in this world, we experience different things, like we see things, we hear things, and we're not really here to debate are they real or unreal. But what we're going to do is use these things to intuit who are we truly, beyond just the name and form that we know or the personality traits that we know of, right? So the next podcast, we'll get into a little deeper thing about, you know, in a little deeper inquiry into completely ruling out the fact that we are not the body. And then we'll talk about why we're not the mind, for example, or why we're not intellect. And then we'll go down after that into talking about what is the nature of this dream experience that we have. And I'll give you some interesting examples which would possibly definitely trigger your, you know, wisdom within to definitely think, hey, maybe there's something that we need to look at a little more in detail. So thanks for that, and do look on to the next session too. Thank you. All right, so now we're going to just go to the third part of this podcast, which is now going to be talking about the applying the same self-inquiry to the mind. So just to recap what we did in part two, so that we have a little continuity here, is that we defined a subject-object relationship as the basis of this inquiry. And while it does sound a little oversimplistic, trust me, if you do hold on to this inquiry without allowing the logical mind to jump in with its, of course, kind of answers, you would actually notice that your mind starts to turn inward and it starts to actually melt, you know, slowly. And then you tend to go the deeper into an experience which answers your question. So the whole objective here of this kind of an inquiry here is not to get your logical mind to jump into an answer. So I'm going to keep saying this again and again, because that's the biggest stumbling block that we have. The false sense of self tends to jump in and tries to, you know, make it look like you know something, but the real knowing is really not an answer from a logical mind, it's an experience. So having said that, we'll jump now to the topic of applying the same topic to the mind. And this is going to be a little useful to anybody here who's listening to this podcast, who is, you know, kind of troubled by their minds, their thoughts and their feelings. We're going to touch upon some topics, and probably we'll split this into a few parts for convenience. So before we get down to this subject object on the mind, I just kind of to get people onto the same platform of discussion, we'd put it on to a topic of what is the thing called mind that we talk about. So on a broad picture or a deeper picture, in a sense, whatever is perceived is the mind. So the world that we perceive outside is actually a projection of our thoughts and feelings. So it's also part of the mind. But the cause of the projection itself is our own thoughts, which is nothing but memories. You know, the what we call in Sanskrit as vasanas, and things stuck in our mind. And these thoughts give rise to feelings. And every time you see something in the world, or, you know, a memory is triggered, you know, then there's feelings triggered in us. And through this inquiry, what you're really going to understand today is that how do you get freedom from being pulled by these thoughts, feelings, and become away emotional about things, right? Now, for the purpose of this discussion, I'm just going to keep, for the first part, let's talk about the mind as thoughts and feelings, and then we'll talk about the world, the things that we perceive through our senses, a little later, right? So coming to thoughts and feelings, we're going to apply the same logic here, that if you're aware of something, then it's not you, so you're aware of it. So the important thing here to break free from thoughts and feelings that disturb you in your work or in any situation or feeling is, the fundamental thing is be mindful and bring your awareness to it. And the way to bring your mindfulness to that moment is to, in case your mind is lost and thoughts are pulling you all over the place and you're just kind of like floating around, just remember one valuable tool that you've got is your own breathing. And you can watch your breathing either at the nose or your tummy or whatever works for you. But the point is, regardless of what thoughts are pulling you, just come back to your breathing. And as you stay with your breathing, you would become aware of what are the thoughts rising in your mind. And the easiest thing to do to break away from a thought is to not fight it. Don't try to think about it's mine or it's not mine. Just simply come to the wisdom and try to bring yourself to the mindful awareness fact that you're aware of the thought, Right? So if you're aware of the thought, then who you must be the person who's aware and not the thought itself. And this is sounds too simple to say it on the podcast, but actually it's a very deep wisdom to have, to remember that you are not what you're aware of. So you're aware of thoughts, so they're not you. And when thoughts rise in your mind, if you're mindful enough and with a little deeper meditation practice, which I'll share some videos also on my posts on my mind, on my blog, which is yourmindsetcoach.blog, you would actually know that you're aware of feelings too, and these thoughts and feelings are related. So you are aware of a feeling. So who you must be beyond the thought or the feeling is the person who's witnessing it. Simply remembering this fact that you are aware of a thought or a feeling is a gateway to freedom from the thoughts and emotions pulling you down. And you need to be able to practice this right where you are in your work or in your relationship or any kind of situation that you're in. And for this, meditation is the key practice that would help you. And I'm also going to tell you some interesting, while we're at this, I'll also tell you some other tips to deal with thoughts and feelings, right? Which, especially if they're really pulling you away and making you lose your grounding, right? So we wind back a little bit. When you have a thought or a feeling, be mindful, watch it. And as you're watching it, this is the critical thing, what I'm going to say here, and you need to pay careful attention to this. Do not be interested in the content of your thought. It's not useful to you. The mind does not belong to you, and it's just important that you're doing this exercise to unplug. See, the key thing in achieving peace of mind is to remember that you are not going to quieten the mind, you're not going to tame the mind, you're not going to still the mind. You are going to unplug from the mind. And unplugging is the easiest thing to do just by understanding your relationship with things. Since you're aware of thoughts and you're aware of feelings, you are not the thought and you are not the feeling. Just remember that. Drop the content. Don't be interested. You need not feel guilty or need to know where it came from. Why is it happening? Irrelevant stuff. You are aware. And it's not you. You're just aware of it. Okay? Now, there may be situations where some of you really don't know what you're thinking and you're just feeling so emotional about things. And we'll just quickly touch upon some things that, if in case you're not aware of thoughts, the simplest thing to do is consciously understand that your breath and your mind are related. Right? And this is the fundamental basis of many yoga practices like Kriya Yoga and many other things like Atma Kriya Yoga. But the key thing is observing your breath will bring you to awareness of thoughts. Likewise, when you're aware of thoughts, you would also be aware of your breathing. And it's important that you understand that when you are disturbed by thoughts, right, which you're attached to, in other words, thinking is equal to attachment, the thinking disturbs your breathing and it puts you into erratic breathing patterns. And as a result of which, you get carried away. Now, coming back to being observant of your breathing helps you to unplug from the mind by just remembering that you are aware of thoughts. And all you need to say, or if it's a little convenient to you and you're not very comfortable with just being aware, just being and watching it, you could always just say, I'm aware. So give a name to your thoughts. So if you say it's anger, for example, you say, I'm aware of the feeling of anger. I'm aware of the thought of anger. I'm aware of the thought of greed, whatever it is, just give it a name. Right? The point is to get to awareness. And when the moment you say a statement like, I'm aware of, you're not contradicting the mind, so it's not going to pull you into the quicksand. And you're also acknowledging that you're aware of it, and that sets you free. Now, coming to the topic of a mind, so what is this mind actually? So if one had to define the mind, and you know, I'm just going to draw an analogy here to a cloth. So if you look at a shirt or whatever clothes that you have, basically it's made of yarn. And then if you drill it down further and further, you come to, so what is the fundamental substrate of mind? You know, basically mind would come down to thoughts or desires. If there's no thoughts, there's no mind. Okay? And that's your experience of a deep sleep where everything is stilled. And you do not even know what happens in deep sleep. But I'll share my experience on that a little later on the stuff. And that's the key to awakening. But the point is that mind is equal to thoughts. No thoughts is equal to no mind. right? And in a meditation practice, so those who do Kriya Yoga would also know that, you know, as your thoughts become thinner and thinner and eventually come to stillness, then the breath also kind of almost vanishes by the time your awareness comes to the point of the point between your two eyes, which is the third eye, right? So, simple thing, you're aware of thoughts, they're not you, and therefore, just don't be interested in the content, just remember that, come back to your breathing. Okay, so every time the mind pulls you with a thought, come back to your breathing and just kind of bring back to your attention to the fact that I am aware of, you know, whatever, give the thought a feeling, a name to it, so that kind of anchors you. And to not be interested in content, right? So we continue the rest in the next part of the podcast, is to keep these recordings not too long. Keep in mind, you're not aware, whatever you're aware of is not you. And we're going to share a little more useful tips on dealing with the mind while we're at this topic. Thank you. All right, so we're now on part four. And this part, what we're going to talk about is in particular about how do you learn to become an observer of the mind and break free from it, right? So one of the interesting things to talk about is we often hear the word called attachment, and you know, it's a very popular thing, and you probably hear of the word detachment quite a bit. Detachment is something which a lot of people tend to, it's a very broadly misunderstood word, and it doesn't happen by yourself denying things to yourself, like, you know, it's as good as tearing flesh from yourself. But the real right, the smooth way to detach is to understand your relationship with an experience and having the wisdom to come out of the pull that it exerts on you. And the pull tends to by default go away and weaken on its own when you kind of understand your relationship with it. So in simplistic terms that we had discussed in part three, that you know, the mind is fundamentally thoughts and feelings. It's a bundle of thoughts and feelings. And if you can witness it, it means it's not you, and you have to be the witness of the mind. And just remembering that is the key thing to unplug. Now, you know, typically for a lot of people who tend to be a little emotional and, you know, attached to thoughts and feelings, and if, like many others in the world, if you're the curious cat and who needs to know why and what, and, you know, what makes you think like that, and these are traps. I mean, they're going to get you stuck into the mind pulling you. It's like quicksand. So if you actually want to come out of the mind and don't want to be pulled by it, the fundamental quality to have is to be disinterested. And interest is of two kinds. Either you like something or you hate something, but both are basically interest. It's positive interest or negative interest. And these things will pull you into the mind. And just becoming aware of a thought and remembering at that point in time that you are aware of the thought is all you need to know, and do not be interested in trying to get anything out of the mind. Out of it. Like, you don't really need to know whether it's you know, whether you need to do something about the thought. No, you just need to remember you're aware of the thought. And I had mentioned that if you are like feeling too pulled by the thought, then, you know, use your willpower and come back to your breathing. And here's another trick for you guys out there, that if the mind, if you really feel very intense with the thought or feeling or emotion. Just to give you a little analogy of a car, driving a car, and a meditation with a car and a driving a car. Now, I know that most of you in the Western world use automatic shifts, so you don't have a clutch, but let's just think for a moment that you've got a car which has a clutch, brake, and an accelerator. And you've got this thing called the mind and the body. So your body is like the car, and the mind is your thoughts, and is basically what drives the car. If you, and you need to know how to control this car. Sometimes it can go out of control. So if your mind is accelerating too fast, that's called thinking. That's like your accelerator. So when you think, just be a little cautious about thinking, because, you know, unless you're on the right track, don't really use the accelerator too much until you get to the right road. So pressing the accelerator is what I would call as thinking. And if you run into a scenario where you're kind of like, you know, your mind is racing too fast and you need to slow it down, then you need to apply a power brake. So one of the tricks of doing a power brake for this mind body car would be for you to inhale and hold your breath for a while and exhale. And if you're able to do this in a 1:2:1, that would be useful, and do it a couple of times till your breathing slows down. So that's applying a power brake. But then I'm sure you'd agree with me that, you know, applying a power brake all the time would not be a skilled way of driving your car. So it's not a skilled way of driving your mind-body car either. You need to be able to slow the car down and then allow it to come to a halt slowly without doing too much brakes on it. And the best way to do that would be to watch your breath. And that's like applying the clutch to your car, the mind-body car. So that would be a useful thing for you to keep in mind. But I'm going to tell you a couple of options here. So one is this car meditation idea. So keep that at the back of your mind. That could be one of the things up your sleeve that you use when you're feeling stressed out. The other thing that you could do is actually to question your thoughts. Now, every time, you know, one of the interesting things that Ramana Maharishi's direct method of self-realization is all about is just asking two fundamental questions. Watch your thoughts and your feelings and question them. So when you have a thought, whatever it is, like let's say, and do this for good things and bad things. That's the key thing. Don't just do it when things are bad, because that's when, you know, that's then you lose the whole purpose of the exercise. But any thought that comes up, question the thought, who is thinking? And do this with attention and ask the question seriously that you really want to know who's thinking. And you're going to see some interesting things. The moment you ask the question, who's thinking, you see the thought stops. Because thoughts fundamentally function without an active thinker. It's just a memory that's replaying in your mind. And the moment you ask the question, who is thinking, basically the memory stops firing, right? And all thoughts basically had a thought before that, which is the I thought. And when you ask the next question, which is who am I? And if you're a little observant, just pay attention to what's happening in your heart region and your breathing, you would actually notice that when you ask these questions, who is thinking and who am I, the breath goes back into your heart. So the heart's the source from the cannon where all this is firing out from you. So asking these two questions, who is thinking and who am I, will send back all thoughts and all feelings. So similarly, you've got a feeling. Look at your feeling, which part of the body is having this feeling, and ask these questions, who is thinking and who am I? And here's a big one for you guys, and I think it's really good for you guys to know, because, you know, a lot of times we tend to reach out for the medicine chest when we have some discomfort or a headache or whatever it is. You can save yourself a lot of trouble in life, especially, and a lot of headaches, especially migraines, and many things are caused by things. And if you actually pay attention to the thought or the feelings that are in your body, your mind's going to tell you what it is that you're stuck with. And asking these two questions is going to, you know, help you heal on the long term rather than running towards a medicine chest. So a quick recap, ask yourself when thoughts arise, who is thinking and who am I? And try and pay attention to what happens to your breathing and see what's happening. What's happening to the breath? Where does it rise from and where does it go? Now, I'm just going to mix a couple of traditions here for your own interest, and it might help you. And I have kind of mentioned to you that very often a lot of thoughts and feelings are actually stemming from memories in your mind. These memories are accumulated over many past lives too. And what's really important and beautiful about this whole thing, about we've got a plethora of tools available in this world today with different traditions contributing so many valuable things, that you can actually heal yourself from past life memories without actually knowing the problem. It doesn't really require you to know which life what happened and all that stuff. It's not required. There's two words which are delete button for your subconscious mind, and which is I love you and thank you. So every time you've got a painful thought or a feeling, just pay attention to it mindfully and just say to yourself, I love you and thank you. And this deletes the thoughts and feelings, and it goes back right to the source of when and what may have caused these kind of feelings in you. And slowly these memories start to lose their power, and, you know, just like water bubbles effervescence and to the top, they surface water and burst. These memories rise up to the surface and burst, and you get free from them quickly, and eventually you save yourself from a lot of possible illnesses that you can get by just accumulating these things and running towards the medical chest and stuff like that. So keep this in mind. These tools are going to help you. Question your mind. You're aware of the mind. Don't be interested in the content. Just remember, watch your thoughts. Since you can watch them, they're not you. Watch your feelings, they're not you. Just remember, they're not you. Don't get into debates and don't be interested in the content. Don't feel guilty whether the thoughts are pleasant or not pleasant. It's all right. And don't be curious where they came from. That's the third thing. And ask these questions. Who is thinking? Who am I? Quickly, just get this into your mind. And one quick way to do this would be to get these questions into your breathing. So whenever you're having a thought, breathe in who is thinking and breathe out who am I. Get the whole thing erased, and you want to take this a little step better, and then you don't want to get to the root of the cause and delete possibly what are the various memories that you've possibly accumulated over many lives to just say I love you and thank you to yourself. Some simple tricks up your sleeve that could help you. Now, an important thing to get back to understanding about the whole breath and mind stuff is that, you see, your breathing and your breath and your mind are key things, you know. When your mind is peaceful, your breathing is going to be rhythmic and it's going to rise up and up from the lower chakras to the higher chakras and help you go to the third eye and set itself free. But when you think too much, what happens is it sinks down and down and you create blocks within your energy channels. And as a result of which, when if you have a sustained thinking pattern, which is not healthy and productive, and what my definition of an unhealthy thinking pattern is, things which are not loving, compassionate to yourself, and which disturb your peace of mind. And excitement also disturbs your peace of mind. So you need to be in a position of keeping yourself calm and just remember the wisdom of who you are. You're the witness. You're not the mind, you're not the thought, you're not the body. And the more often you kind of nag yourself with this thinking and contemplation of who you could be by just remembering you are witnessing and you're not that, is what is going to set you free. And it's kind of hard to explain what is the benefit of doing these things, but once you start, you're going to be pretty surprised that, you know, you never knew you could be so peaceful and so quickly peaceful too. And these methods work for anybody. I mean, you don't have to be something like an advanced practitioner or, you know, basic practitioner. It's fundamentally a simple method which works for anybody, right? So I hope you like these tips and you can get cracking on some of these, and we'll keep sharing more interesting things as we go by. The next part. Right, so we've had four parts of sharing about awakening through the process of self-realization or awakening, or I'd call it a self-inquiry, right? And as you can see, it's pretty straightforward and it sounds pretty simple. I've intentionally kept it pretty simple, and it truly is very simple as long as you just kind of bypass your logical mind and nag your mind with these kind of questions and practices and, you know, drill it in and learn to do a little stabilization practices with your mind so that you're able to hold on to a question and don't get fooled by it. And I'm going to here tell you a little stabilization practice and some interesting things that I just want you to observe. And one of the key things is to develop your meditation practice to be able to kind of stabilize your mind so that you can see through the, you know, the kind of confusion that's caused by a monkey mind that keeps jumping, right? Now, what is meditation and can have, you know, and these kind of practices, and how does it all help? Well, in a sense, when you do self-inquiry, you are meditating, and when you meditate, you are doing self-inquiry too in its own kind of way. And what's important is that, you know, we all have certain energy within us, and you may call it, some people call it prana, chi, qigong, or, you know, some people will call it kundalini shakti and all that. But the key thing is that as you learn to meditate and learn to sit still and stay focused on any particular point of concentration, whether it's like, you know, some people may choose to watch breathing at the nostrils, or if you're a Kriya yoga practitioner, you would kind of focus your, you know, watching your breathing or the point between your two eyebrows. The key thing is that to arrest the flicker of the mind, and at the moment you're able to arrest the flicker of the mind for a few moments, you're able to see through the kind of, you know, the trap of believing the mind and its fickle movements to be real, and you'd be able to differentiate between what's reality versus a semblance of reality per se, right? So I'm going to, if you do visit this blog of mine called yourmindsetcoach.blog, you would actually see some links to some meditation videos which I've shared, which have inspired me over these years, and they're quite pretty useful videos. You can learn to meditate sitting at home, and all it requires is a fundamental practice of you having a kind of stable posture. You don't necessarily have to do any tough yoga poses for this, but, you know, if you're a good yoga practitioner, it certainly helps, but then it's not a prerequisite. But if you're able to just have a standard set of sitting process where you can at least just have a stabilized posture and practice the simple meditation, which I'll try and share a link with you on the blog. Oh, I think it's already there, which you could kind of just browse through it and you'll get it there. you'd find that, you know, as you still your mind, your energy of its own just starts to rise. And all you need to do to still your mind, like I was telling you, the car example of car meditation with your accelerator being your thinking, so use it carefully. And the power brake would be your inhale, hold, and exhale, and clutching or would be something like your mindfulness practice. And when you learn to watch your breathing mindfully from a distance, not too close, not too far, don't intimidate your breathing, slowly you do find that your breathing slows down, it becomes rhythmic, and slowly your breath, which is nothing but your life force in itself, or what you call is chi or prana, and contains the kundalini shakti, slowly starts to rise up. It rises up your spine, and as it rises, it pulls up the kundalini shakti or the chi energy up and activates your higher chakras. And as you activate your higher chakras, you also become your mind. You basically transcend the body and go from body to the mind, and mind to the intellect, and intellect to your higher self, the real self of who you are. Put it in an oversimplified way, but it takes years to do so. But as you practice it, it helps you. And even a little bit of practice makes a lot of difference in terms of how you feel with your day-to-day work and day-to-day life. And you tend to be a much more peaceful and happy person, regardless of what your scenario is. So practice the meditation and practice awakening through these questions. And I'm going to share a couple of lot more interesting things through these podcasts over these weeks, which I will keep intimating through these social posts. And I'm glad to also, I'm always reachable to anyone who has questions and would like to get in touch with me. So you could either Skype me on Mohan, Mohan dot Sundaram, which is sundaram.73@live.com, or on WhatsApp. You could reach me on WhatsApp. So that's +918790171132. Whatever that works, or you could always just Skype. So the key thing is, the more you practice, the more you'd get out of it. And good luck to all of you. Thank you.